Have you ever had a fantastic experience with healthcare? What about a not so great one? Well, here at the Alinea Life Podcast, we're going to talk about it. The Alinea Life Podcast, a production of the Alinea Collective, exists to be a public resource to you, the listener, who at some point or another has been a patient of this crazy thing we call the healthcare system. Co-hosts and doctors of physical therapy, William Mills and Joey Rosie, interview experts in the fields of physical rehabilitation, fitness, and medicine, as well as the athletes and patients, on their experiences with the good, the bad, and the ugly of healthcare. That's better. I was happy with that one.
The topics discussed in this podcast should not be considered medical advice or a means of diagnosis. If you're in need of medical attention or advice, seek a licensed healthcare professional. The conversations in the Alinea Life Podcast are intended for adult audiences only, and though we keep most topics professional, there is occasional strong language.
Hey everyone, William here. Today's episode is episode 12. Episode 12 is part of the Musings Tour 2018. It was the third podcast I recorded in Boston during my several day stay there. I was hanging out with Dr. Zach Gabor of Boston PT Wellness and co-founder of the Level Up Initiative. Today's podcast was filmed in his kitchen over a brew right before we went to a Red Sox game. It was a fantastic, fantastic day. Zach is one of the most passionate people I've ever met. It's one of those things where all of the people that I met on this tour, I had initially met through Instagram, right? And going into meeting these different people, the expectation of, oh snap, are they going to be like the same person that they are on the internet? Zach is the exact same person in real life as he is on the internet. He exudes passion for what he's doing. He'll talk more about the Level Up Initiative once we get into it, but the Level Up Initiative is basically a movement to get healthcare practitioners, professionals, physical therapists on the same page in an effort to spur them on to think critically, think about what they say to patients, think about how they communicate, refinement of soft skills. He'll do a much better job of explaining it than I will, but it's a great thing. I'm a part of it. I'm a mentee right now. We're going into module 3. It's been great with my mentor, Tony Camella, as well as my small group, bouncing ideas off one another. Just learning together. It's been a fantastic experience. I think that's all I have to say. I think that's all I have to say about this intro. Without further ado, here we go. Thanks for listening, guys.
That was a good start. P.S. By the way, if you hit the table or like,
yeah, that reverberates mad loud. So don't.
Because baby blue is.
So if I'm putting my beer down, is that good?
Yeah, like a deadlift.
That eccentric beer control?
Yeah. Don't just slam it. All right. So we're hanging out just before we go to Fenway. It's going to be my first time in Fenway.
Fucking right, kid. Fenway Pack.
So that's the way we're going?
Yeah.
Are you going to do the whole podcast in that?
I couldn't. I could not do it.
You couldn't?
That's tough.
You couldn't hold it?
Nah.
Okay. So tell us about, tell us a little bit about how you got started on the gram with your own IG. When did all that start?
It kind of started informally before it became Simple Strength Physio. Mm-hmm. I was kind of putting a little bit of stuff out as a new grad, but it really didn't start getting pushed until I came to Boston, and Matt Ibrahim really pushed me a little bit. He gave me the push I needed to kind of put myself out there.
Yeah.
I was definitely super uncomfortable with it and didn't really think anyone would give a crap about what I had to say, nor did I feel I really had the right to be saying anything, more importantly. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of started, and that was basically, almost a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when I really started pushing my own content, and it was just out of a love for doing the stuff. I had kind of strong opinions about where I really missed the boat as a student, and more so as a new grad. And mm-hmm. so that was kind of my purpose, was to try and start stirring the pot a little bit and get students thinking differently about curriculum and about where the profession was going. So that was basically where it started.
So did it, because I think I remember the first post that I saw you do, it was about doing like closed chain shoulder exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And maintaining glenohumeral centration.
Ooh.
And I was like, that's a dope word. This guy must know what he's talking about. Centration.
I duped everyone into following me through using fancy terms.
Yeah. So, but so that's how I kind of stumbled upon your page before I knew who you were.
Well, and if I'm correct, I believe that was in a collaboration series with Teddy Wilsey. And AKA Strength Coach Therapy and Joe Gambino.
Okay.
I was doing a really corny little series called Kinetic Hygiene, which we all kind of laugh at ourselves and the things that we thought of. At the end of the day, it was definitely a very well-intentioned series. Yeah. And I think there's some good stuff there. I would definitely challenge some of the own things, my own things that I said within that series. But I think, for the most part, the narratives were definitely on point, but it is a very, it's definitely more of a bio-influenced, and we definitely weaved in some pain science stuff because that was always kind of a part of it, but it is very much like a la the Mike Boyle alien, like, you know, joint by joint sort of thing, which I think there's some validity there, but yeah. I think we should always kind of be looking back at what we did and critiquing where we were at and where things could potentially be better.
Yeah.
But I will say, for those out there listening, the power of collaboration. I think that's one of the biggest pieces of advice I have on getting started, is that's a big way that I started to get exposure. Just networking, collaborating on series. Hell, I mean, shit, you're sitting in my apartment right now.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen if you stumble across my page and we kind of start networking and reaching out. So there's something to this stuff, you know. But yeah. That was a fun little series that kind of got me started.
You will say, not to be confused with Will Z, as in Teddy.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So, I think one of your favorite words is narrative. In your own. So it's more like narrative.
Fucking narratives, kid. Yeah.
So since this podcast is like in the scope of like public education,
yeah,
what would you describe, what do you mean by the word narrative, and mm-hmm. how that can either positively or negatively influence a patient and their perspective of like what they're being told?
Yeah, absolutely. So narratives and semantics for me are the non-negotiables in healthcare. We can have the conversation all day long about manual therapy, dry needling. I think that's a waste of our time in terms of like getting all on the same page. Like, manual therapy without a doubt has its place. But it's the narrative surrounding it, right? It's the language that we use around this stuff that is the most important thing. That for me, if you're going to use manual therapy, that's fine. But just be mindful of your narratives around that.
Yeah.
One example of a narrative in healthcare that is a case study from today, for example, with a client I was working with, is, you know, she was training at a gym. She had an onset of right scapular pain. And of course, you know, she went to her ortho and was diagnosed with scapular dyskinesis. And that's the type of thing that I'm talking about. Those are the just bold, sweeping declarations that diagnose people with these pathologies that we know aren't necessarily well correlated to symptom presentation and pain, yet their beliefs in that are actually documented to drive persistent pain in the shape of kinesophobia and fear. Mm-hmm. Because we get down to beliefs. And when people believe these things, they can drive fear of movement. Mm-hmm. So when this patient comes in and she's like, well, doc told me that I have scapular dyskinesia. She's going to be scared to load it. She's going to be scared to move. When it's a coin flip, if you look at someone's shoulder blade and to guess which one is the painful one with mm-hmm. a little bit of aberrant motion, if you will.
So would you say that the term or diagnosis scapular dyskinesis or scapular dyskinesia is kind of like a garbage term that doesn't really tell you what exactly is going on? It's kind of just like an umbrella term.
It's just used when it's used as a blatant, like, one-to-one correlate of mm-hmm. pain. That's what I have an issue with.
Yeah.
You know, if you're dealing with someone that has a little bit of shoulder pain and you frame it in a way as like, hey, you know what? Maybe that shoulder blade could be moving a little bit more. I don't know if that's connected to the pain that you're feeling, but we're probably not going to not benefit from addressing some closed chain work, a little bit more scapular awareness drills. These are things that could definitely help. But when you frame it as, oh, yeah, you have scapular dyskinesis, no wonder you have left shoulder pain.
Yeah.
That's what I have an issue with, because that's some straight up bullshit.
You just made me think of, do you remember that meme that everybody was putting on things, like when something bad would happen, and then it would turn into the and it would just get launched into the galaxy?
I don't know that.
You don't, oh gosh. Well, I'm gonna meme this.
Yeah, please, with, dude.
Like a winging scapula, and then send it off into the galaxy with this song.
Fucking full send that, man. That's, you got my permission. But yeah, that's really the thing though, man. Like narratives, it's just crazy to me how we have so much research. And that's the other thing that really triggers me is the whole like, oh, you're so research based. Like, do you, like, it's not like I pull research papers out of my butt when I'm dealing with patients and be like, look at this recent paper by Mills et al. 2018 that looks like that says scapular dyskinesis doesn't matter. That's not what that means. Being research-based means letting it guide us. And we know enough now to be mindful of our damn language. Doesn't mean, like, go ahead and use manual therapy. Go ahead and do closed chain exercises. Go ahead and think along some of those biomedical thoughts. But if the way you're framing it isn't updated in this day and age, then you're doing a disservice to this profession and the people that you're serving. And I truly stand by that statement. The language and the narrative piece is a non-negotiable for me. And that's the issue that I have. Fair?
Fair enough. Yeah. Would you say the problem happens? Nice.
He said a graceful that. Beer set.
Would you say that historically, so give a little brief history of like what you mean by biomedical?
Yeah.
And how that has led to what patients can see is a very negative thing whenever right. they hear a diagnosis that then tells them that they shouldn't be moving, whenever we know as physical therapists that in pretty much any instance, unless there's like a need for like a surgical intervention for for immobilization, because like you just shattered your heel bones,
right?
Movement is usually, to some degree, the best bet. So go into like how the biomedical model.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Will. Like the biomedical model just doesn't account for the psychosocial aspects of everything.
And what do you mean by that?
People's beliefs, people's psychology around pain and injury, the way that they're influenced by their social upbringings. For example, like we have parents that are so helicoptering over their kids that they grow up and they are so anxious and perseverate over pain and injury.
Yeah.
And the research shows us that that's the type of stuff that yields that negative feedback loop of pain, right? Mm-hmm. And that persistent pain state. And so the problem with the biomedical model is that it's extremely well-intentioned. We needed that as a starting point to understand more about the anatomical influence on pain and injury, but it just doesn't take a look at the whole picture. Mm-hmm. That's really the main issue, where it says, oh, you have pain because you have scapular dyskinesis. But now we have so much research that debunks that myth, much like any other like butt wink myth, the perfect posture myth, the flat foot gives you foot pain myth. Like all of these things are so challenged. And again, it's well-intentioned, but I think the biggest missing link is that, again, the biomedical has a misrepresentation of the current neuroscience of pain, which has really deeply influenced the whole biopsychosocial model. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not to say, like, I get it. The pendulum will always, like, middle of the road, man. And that's where I get a little bit triggered, is that I think folks hear pain science and they think that people like me are sitting in a room talking people out of pain for a fucking hour. Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, they come in with these crazy beliefs. I mean, you were literally, you sat with me during an eval yesterday when this guy came in, and within the first 10 minutes, it was, well, I know my posture sucks. I've been told a lot of times that my posture sucks. You know, I got this dysfunction, that dysfunction. Like, they're told all these things, and you can see firsthand how these negative beliefs can legitimately play into the persistent pain they're feeling. Yeah. But it doesn't discount the involvement of structure and biomechanics and the implications that might have. Mm-hmm. It just means that we have to take a more global view and see how it all fits together. Yeah. We need to be able to appraise when tissue is relevant, when biomechanics are relevant, because it isn't always.
Yeah.
It's more about giving people permission to move, because mm-hmm. a lot of times it's that kinesophobia and that fear of movement, that apprehension of movement, that can be so critical in perpetuating persistent pain states.
Yeah. Him specifically, he made the statement, and I'm loosely quoting this here, but he said something along the lines of, I've been told so many different things that I don't know what to believe anymore.
Mm. Amen. He did say that, man. He did say that. And that's so hard, but that's what we're dealing with on a daily basis, man. And you don't want to step on other healthcare providers' toes.
Yeah.
You want to respect the things other people say. So it's this constant game of, like, validating their beliefs while trying to inject a little bit of de-education. But it's this whole thing that it's like, man, we need to do better as a profession of being on the same page in terms of the language we use. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care if you're a McKenzie therapist, a Mulligan advocate, you know, PRI, you know, FRC, our understanding of how pain neuroscience influences all of this needs to be integrated into whatever sort of system that you use. Mm-hmm. Because all these systems are great, and all these systems work, and all these systems are very well intentioned, but it feeds people these different beliefs.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I'm lacking that 5 degrees of left shoulder internal rotation. No wonder my, like, right hip hurts. Like, there's just these crazy claims being made that are unsubstantiated. And so we just need to be careful. And we need to kind of hold ourselves globally to a higher standard. I don't know if you saw Jason Ure. I don't even know if that's how you say his last name. Jason Ure wrote an unbelievable article the other day about how it's not us challenging each other that's, like, going to change. Like, people don't see that. Patients don't see that and get turned off from coming to PT. Patients get turned off from coming to PT because they get fed bullshit narratives by practitioners that aren't holding themselves to a high enough standard of checking the language that they use, that practice that they're doing, mm-hmm. based on the current best evidence. So that's why I have a tremendous amount of respect for guys like Ben Cormack out in England, or the clinical athlete crew, or the entropy physio crew out in Chicago, like Sandy Hilton and Sarah. Like, those are people that have a high standard of integrity when it comes to language and narratives. And that's the type of stuff that I have the highest amount of respect for.
Yeah. What would you say to someone who would say that pain science and the advent of its implementation into everyday practice is like a fad, kind of like, I don't know, rotated hips and,
yeah, so,
and tight hamstrings causing low back pain?
So, absolutely. We hear that all the time, and it's definitely something that triggers me, but let me also validate some of those concerns, because I can totally hear that and I can see that, because there are definitely folks where it does swing too far. And to be perfectly honest with you, when I first learned about pain neuroscience stuff, I was probably one of those guys that was swung a little too far, that I was so excited about all this stuff, mm-hmm. that I would ride high on my pain science horse, and that doesn't sound right. I
would you would go friggin' you would go Teddy Roosevelt.
I was on my pain science high horse. And you know, I would maybe not pay as much attention to the other stuff, but the truth of the matter is, everything matters. And when I hear claims like pain science is just a fad, or pain science, it's just like PRI, or it's just like another fad. I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, pain neuroscience is something that's, like, we're studying the science of pain. How could we not integrate that into our clinical practice? Pain, is pain a fad? Like, is science a fad? Yeah. Sick, dude. Like, my bad, like, for integrating that into my clinical practice. But, you know, I would just say it's really about, you have to challenge your own biases. You have to understand where BPSers definitely go too far. The biomedicalers go too far. The pendulum's always going to swing. Sometimes things are more relevant in the biomechanical side of things, and that's okay. But the one thing that doesn't change is the narrative around it. So even if it is more biomedically influenced, your narrative should still be updated, and that's where that non-negotiable aspect of that comes in. I don't care if you're more influenced that way, but check your damn language. Because I'm so sick of patients coming in feeling fearful and defeated because they've been fed some of these, like, poorly correlated narratives because, you know, it just sucks, man, because it's well-intentioned. Like, we have to remember that. Healthcare practitioners get into healthcare for a reason, not to make people feel crappy and scared.
Yeah.
They're doing the best that they can, but they're not holding themselves to the standard of being current with all the best evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of not great.
Yeah. So would you say there's a lot of, so what would you say to a student, like a current PT student or any other kind of medical professional student that's learning about pain science?
Yeah.
Like, should they take that route that you did whenever you first got out of school where you were like riding your high horse and like, so you made me think, cause I was just in Washington.
Yeah.
About Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And Teddy Roosevelt always said, like, carry a big stick and...
speak softly?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I totally forgot the second part, but you nailed it. So, like, well, then in that instance, you should. You should, but you should not, like, hit someone over the head with your big BPS stick.
Exactly, man. And it's like Mike Amato said this in his... shout out Mike Amato, new coworker. Yeah. Pumped about that. Walking encyclopedia of research.
Yeah.
He was talking about it in the Movement Docs podcast about, you know, how it's this whole iceberg and like patients might need just the tip, but we still need to understand everything, you know, and so, but some people need the whole iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it's on us to understand all of that. But that's where the true art of, and I guess more so the skill of educating. Like, you know, Mike and I were talking about this the other day. Education is the number one tool that we have as physical therapists. But we're so caught up in being these egotistical manual therapists. Like, we're so afraid to relinquish that ability to touch people that we feel like we can't do anything without it. And I think that that constrains us. Because we can have such more meaningful impacts on healthcare costs and spending if we challenge ourselves, especially since the evidence doesn't necessarily support the use of manual therapy, to do more education and more active strategies. You know, it has its place. So it's not like it's one or the other. But I think I really started to make a shift when I would challenge myself to, like, just don't arbitrarily do manual therapy. Like, I think it's disgusting, like, absolutely effing disgusting that clinics will literally make you do arbitrary manual therapy to bill fucking units. That shit exists everywhere, and that is part of the problem, and it is so disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, beyond triggers me. It is so unethical.
I think you're triggered right now.
Dude, it's just, it really makes me mad, though, because that's bullshit. That's not fair, man.
Do you think to some degree, that kind of starts from the top down? Because, like, being in my last clinical and whatnot, it seemed like, I mean, I had to be mindful of the units that I was billing because you have to remain productive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And manual therapy gets a higher reimbursement rate than patient education, right? For most...
Well, patient education isn't necessarily a billable unit.
Oh, it was on WebPT.
Oh, was it? Oh, nice. Usually that it's like considered as part of your like education for Therex and neuromuscular re-ed.
Well, do you think that's ass backwards? Because you can't, if you're in an insurance type of setting and you're basically So say you do a PT eval.
Yeah.
And the first 30 minutes are spent talking someone off the ledge because they think that they can never bend over to pick something up again.
Why? Because they saw a post on Instagram about a spine blowing up because they bent over?
Yeah.
Shameless plug, because that shit really pisses me off too. But anyway, continue.
So say half your hour is spent educating and just having a conversation. What, like, to some degree, that's not...
That's neuromuscular re-ed.
Okay.
Because you're having some physiological neuro effects.
Yeah.
When you educate them.
Yeah.
Like, look at the research. Look at placebo. Look at all the things related to fear-induced pain response.
Yeah. Well, I would agree. I would agree that it's neuro re-ed.
Yeah.
But...
I feel you.
You have to... Because there's so much, like...
Playing of the game.
Playing of the game and, like, this chessboard game with, like, maintaining a...
Dude, I used to have to go into this old company I used to work for, who is also the bane of my damn existence. I literally had to go in. They called it creative billing. I would have to go in, and per insurance, I would have to switch my neuro re-ed and Therex units for whichever insurance reimbursed one by, like, the extra 5 cents. I would have to change it. I was like, yo, I am out of this shit. Fuck this. Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. And I get it, right? You're running a business. You have to be productive. But my whole thing is that people are missing the damn big picture. Because if you run a quality business and a quality service, you will have productivity for life. Mm-hmm. You will build relationships that last for life. But PTs are so focused in this damn scarcity mindset and about getting as many numbers as they can through the door. But that is BS. And they're going to run themselves out of business because there's new waves of PT that are starting to realize this quality, and they're a little constrained, but the change is happening.
Yeah.
And those big mills, man, I'm telling you, like, there's no way that's going to be sustainable in 20 years. These big mills, they're going to have to either change and adapt, or they're going to go out of business.
Right. Go in a little bit on the scarcity versus abundance mindset.
Yeah.
What exactly does that mean?
So scarcity mindset being like you're in competition with everyone. Everything's a competition. You're not willing to share any of your secret sauce. Like it's all you. Yeah, the secret sauce. Like here's the Boston PT and Wellness ACL post-op protocol. No one can know it. Like that scarcity mindset. Scarcity mindset is like living in competition with others. Mm-hmm. And it comes across as just like terribly... fixed mindset and like not growth oriented and closed off, and you're going to turn a lot of people off with that. Whereas that abundance mindset is more about teamwork, it's more about collaboration, it's more about working together as a profession to see how we can all help patients do better. Yeah. Man, we have patients coming every day from different clinics because they were getting crappy care. I don't want that. There should be a standard of quality care everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you look, I've looked at some of the stats, it's crazy. Someone showed me that. We're not even tapping into about 93% of the population doesn't even know what physical therapy is or what we do.
I was about to ask your thoughts on that.
That's only, crazy.
It's only technically 7% of patients. I think it's a low back pain stat. Is only 7% of patients with low back pain are getting referred to PT by their PCP.
Right.
What? How can you justify the scarcity mindset and there's not enough patients if we're only seeing 7% of them?
But that's exactly it. Like, if we work together abundantly, we'd be able to advocate for our profession.
Yeah.
Focus on, like, outreach, teamwork, and get people understanding what we do.
Right.
And we're going to reach more people. And if we have a standard of quality, and that's something that I see a lot, and I hear a lot, and I resonate with, people can't get behind Get PT First because 70% of PTs stink. Mm-hmm. So... Man, I had 84 kids in my class. I would send my mom or dad to maybe 10 of them, and that's being generous. And I think that's a pretty fair representation of who I've talked to about how they feel about their class. Now, granted, even if we say that out of the 84, 30 to 40 of them go into ortho, that's still 10 out of 40 people. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
That is actually terrifying. That I wouldn't feel confident sending my mom or dad. They would have a 1 in 4 chance of getting a quality PT. That's an issue.
rolling the dice.
That, yeah, that's a fucking risk reward I'm not willing to venture into, man. That's why networking is huge, and we're starting to build this network of really awesome forward thinking PTs. Everyone doesn't need to be the same exact way, but there needs to be a baseline of ethics and integrity that help us practice in some sort of common language.
So what are you doing to do to drive that change?
Level Up Initiative, baby. I'm trying to influence the next generation of students. That's my biggest passion in life. I feel so strongly that if we can influence and inspire students, they will make the change. They will drive the change they want to see. Yeah. They will inspire the next generation of students to be passionate nuts like I am and like they are, to become the drivers of change because they have the power to do it.
Yeah.
The class that we're teaching at MGH right now is because students made it. So if more students start to take action, and if I could help inspire them to do that and instill values of critical thinking and growth mindset and more of the communication and education skills, hell yeah. That's the type of stuff that I want to see spread like wildfire. I'm not trying to sell a system. I'm not trying to sell a sexy joint technique. I'm trying to sell thinking and being reasonable and being advocates for our damn profession. And it's rooted in something I believe in so much that I'm so excited to get rolling with it. And I'm just pumped because the next generation of PTs are freaking bright, man. And it's exciting times ahead.
It's like a grade 5 brain manip?
Bro, yeah. It's like off
not,
the...
Not to be confused with craniosacral therapy.
Yes, correct.
I need to show you the paragraph that Stanley Paris wrote in our extremity 3 manual on his thoughts on craniosacral therapy. It's pretty hilarious.
I would love to hear it. Is it like Mike Boyle's thoughts on CrossFit?
Maybe, but I don't know if I agree with Mike Boyle.
Do you know what Mike Boyle's thoughts on CrossFit are?
Mm-mm.
Oh, he fucking hates it. He like absolutely takes a giant poop on it.
That's why I probably don't agree with it.
Fair deal. But is that what Paris said about craniosacral, or he's about that life?
No, he's not. He, right. I think... The one word that sticks out to me is because it's one of my top 10 faves is he calls craniosacral therapists charlatans.
That's a nice SAT word right there.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more charlatans in our business than just the craniosacral therapists.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much. There's so much pseudoscience out there. It's nuts, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well-intentioned pseudoscience. That's what's dangerous. Because these guys are charismatic. These gals are charismatic. They're trying to do well by the best that they know. But it's just, I don't know, man. That's the type of stuff that literally, like, I wake up at 5 determined to be a part of taking action. Because there's no way I'm just going to sit around and let this shit happen. It ain't right. This is a service profession. And we owe it to the humans that we serve to be as up to date as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And be willing to challenge our biases in order to grow.
So you would say that's your main goal as a like with your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love practicing, so I'm going to continue to always practice. But my goal is to really try and influence as many students and new grads as possible to be drivers of change so we can get this standard. And if we can get some change at the level of the boards, that would be nice too. Because they're still talking about testing, breaking up adhesions with their hands.
On the board exam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That shit cray.
Yeah, the board exam.
But that's why you can't even blame students, because this is the shit they're being taught.
Yeah.
But our academia and our school setting is so effed up that they're taught to just study and pass the test. Study and pass the test. Memorize this. They're not taught to think. Yeah. Challenging stuff isn't accepted.
Mm-hmm.
They're outcasted and ostracized for that or punished.
Mm-hmm.
So we have no nonconformists. We only have people that conform and jump through the hoops and don't challenge the status quo. But that's not how we effing grow.
Yeah.
That's how we say, oh, well, we've always done it like that. Fuck that.
Do you think... So, I know. Well, at my school, it was always presented in a way that we were encouraged to think for ourselves. But that famous line of, you need to know this for your boards.
Right.
Still, I mean, it echoes in in my dreams.
Yeah.
With my nightmares. Yeah. Studying for that test. How do you think that's ever going to change? Or how do you think that's going to get changed?
So here's the thing. Do I think it's ever going to change? I freaking hope so, man. Because here's the thing. We are a medical profession. And if we're sitting here saying, well, this isn't what's right, but you got to study it for the boards. We just admitted that it's not up to date. And I understand that things take time. But for the love of Pete, there needs to be a little bit more urgency. There needs to be a little bit more urgency. If we're sitting here saying, and I've spoke face to face with seasoned clinicians who are private practice owners and really awesome human beings. And they're like, well, yeah, you know, they might be involved in academia. Like, well, we're kind of constrained. They just got to study to, you know, pass the boards. And then they learn when they get out of school. They're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to school. And that's the stuff that they're not even going to be using to practice. I call bullshit, man. I think we need to do better. And I think everyone knows we need to do better. People are just scared of change. I mean, what Marilyn Moffitt has been trying to... She wrote the most powerful email. She is one of the Macmillan Award winners and is heavily involved in the APTA and at the highest levels. And she's been trying to drive positive change into physical therapy. And she said herself that things have hardly moved forward in a quarter of a century. That is terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's just not excusable. Like, the fact that other people can't get outraged at this is what concerns me. Because I don't understand how people can't see an issue with this stuff. Mm-hmm. I get it. It takes time, but we can be doing better. We can be taking more action. And that's why I've dedicated my life and everything that I'm doing to taking action and hopefully inspiring people to take action. Because together, we can get this shit done.
Agreed.
Fucking tachycardia up in this bitch right now.
What's your heart rate?
Dude, I'm like, I don't know. I got to do Korvonen's formula right now. I think I'm fucking peeking out towards max HR right now.
So I have written down in my questions list, what are we still lacking in healthcare? But I think you just kind of knocked that one out the park.
We're lacking humility.
Yeah.
And ownership. That's what we're really lacking in two words.
Mm-hmm. So... we're talking about this in the field of physical therapy because we're PTs.
Yep.
I've spoken with one of my good friends who's a registered nurse who's about to go into NP school. And we talked about, like, pain science and pain science education. And we've had some great talks about it and how it's, like, implemented into the PT world.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, this was never discussed in nursing school.
Yeah.
So I mean I can't speak for
I think I know where you're going with
other
this.
Professions, but so I'm interested in having more conversations with other medical professionals.
Absolutely.
To see, like, what's the scale of it, because there's something to say about, like, in the PT world, mm-hmm. because the, like, pain education and knowing and learning about current research and best practice and then choosing to not abide by it,
right,
is kind of, you know, unforgivable, but, like,
very, very well done. So
but like, if you have no idea, you're just in ignorant bliss, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a perspective, yeah, on it, because you have no idea it's
absolutely
happening.
Absolutely.
So how do you think, like, what do you think the role in physical therapy to have conversations across professional
absolutely
boundaries
so
should be?
So here's the deal, right? We need to be taking initiative in so many different angles.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be taking initiative to have conversations with people outside of physical therapy. We need to be willing to be calling up chiropractors or strength and conditioning professionals that kind of, like, grayly muddle into rehab. We need to talk.
Like banded mobilizations?
Yeah, but more of, like, the unsanctioned strength and conditioning coaches that are doing rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Look, at the end of the day, the lines are really gray and people are going to do what they want to do. So we should do our best to try and at least have conversations with them. Because if we just shun them, they're going to continue to do what they want to do. With doctors, we need to be reaching out. And so that's where things like, you know, we're doing at Boston PT and Wellness and through Level Up, we're doing community education events where we're trying to leverage not only the public, but we've had some docs in there and we're trying to continue those conversations with the doctors because that's where a lot of this stuff is generated.
Yeah.
I mean, case in point, Our Lady Today, the case study of, you know, scapular dyskinesis, like we said, she probably has like 5 years until that shoulder blade just up and flies away off her body. She's screwed. but you know, like, it's well-intentioned. And at the end of the day, I think when we have conviction in what we're doing and the research, doctors can't not respect it. And I think if we learn anything from the Australians, which we can learn a lot from them because they're crushing everything, you know, Lorimer and the Noy group talk about how they do community education for the public. And that's how they're getting to doctors, because they're going out and they're spending time and energy investing into teaching the public. And then the public are going to their doctors and challenging them. And then the doctors are like, the fuck? What? And then they're coming to the physio and they're like, what the hell are you telling my patient, mate? And crikey. And but then you're starting to have these conversations.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know what? You know what it all boils down to? Again, fucking humility and ego. Like, because some doctors, physios, chiros, trainers aren't willing to have these conversations because they can't fathom the fucking thought of crushing their ego. Mm-hmm. They're not willing to have humility.
Yeah.
And as Jocko Willings would say, they're not willing to take extreme ownership. Mm. And that's some BS. So, can we make a new segment like that's some BS?
You want to make a new podcast out of that?
Yeah.
I need to put out my first episode on mine before we do that. So I have some friends in medical school.
Yeah.
That we have had some
banter,
some good conversations, and some went absolutely nowhere conversations.
Okay.
Because I have not abided by the latter part of Teddy Roosevelt's saying sometimes.
You've been bashing him over the head with your BPS stick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom. Or as Michael, I love Michael Ray has his science paddle. Oh, his yeah. BPS paddle.
Yeah.
Fucking smack some integrity into you.
Yeah. So I guess what would your advice be to either a student who is on fire about this stuff?
Yeah.
Or a new grad who is still super lit about it? Like, How do you approach that conversation?
Absolutely. Ready? So we can draw an analogy, because analogies are a fire way to learn. Yeah. About what are you going to say, like, regardless of whatever you know. Like, that patient that comes in with 30 years of fucking beliefs of why they have, you know, right knee pain.
Mm-hmm.
I.e. the patient that you saw me working with yesterday. If I come in hot and I'm trying to challenge everything, there's no way change is going to be made.
Yeah.
We have to be comfortable with validating people's beliefs and slowly interjecting different ways to look at things over the course of time. With some, you can be a little bit more aggressive, with some a little less aggressive, but that's a matter of getting comfortable reading the situation.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're not going to get successful patient outcomes if you're coming in hot challenging them right off the bat. Mm-hmm. You need to read the situation and pick your battles. Yeah. It's the same thing for colleagues. When we're talking to other colleagues that have these really strong held beliefs, if you come in hot with your challenging, they're just going to defend what they're talking about more.
Yeah.
So you really have to be willing to listen, hear what they're saying, potentially validate some of the things that they're saying. I call it like pseudo-validating, where you're kind of just like, okay, like that could be a possibility. Like, mm-hmm. even if maybe it's not, but if you're like, no, 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 I disagree. Like, fuck you. Like, they're going to be like, all right, fuck you even harder. Like, I'm not going to listen to what you have to say.
Yeah.
So there's kind of an art to it, but I think we can learn a lot from that in terms of like being more tempered, right? The whole tempered radical thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to be willing to kind of tone down our passion in order to get the message across. Because mm-hmm. otherwise it's going to be fallen upon deaf ears.
Yeah. I think with my experiences, because it's with my good friends, that in any part or aspect of our lives we come in real hot about anyways, that coming in hot on these kind of issues, it's kind of like the same as talking about politics or religion.
No, and I trust me, dude. I get it, man. I'm like, I'm triggered like 90% of the day. It's not good for my fucking cortisol levels.
No, it's not.
But I'm also really inspired a lot because I see a lot of amazing things happening in the community.
Yeah.
But no, man. It's just we just all have to kind of learn how to be a little bit more tempered yet aggressive, if that makes sense. It doesn't mean that we don't pursue and live with passion and vigor, but like we can't just always just come in super hot because we love something so much. Mm. Like I love Andy Chen, shout out Embark Lifestyle. He just did a reflection post on his first clinical, and he was like, yo, like second biggest thing I learned was like, I came in hot with the pain science.
He did.
Because like, I was so hype about it, which is great because it's really awesome and it's really exciting, but that's not fair to meet patients with where they're at and just like pour this bucket of fucking like shit all over their head. And they're like, wait, what? Like you learn over time.
For the listeners, he just poured an imaginary bucket on top of my head. I don't know if that'll make it into the video clip, but
yeah,
audio only listeners.
But it's just learning how to control that a little bit more. It's well intentioned again, but we got to learn how to hone that and harness it into something productive.
Yeah, kind of like walking alongside the patient instead of walking in front of them.
Amen.
I've heard of that as like relationship advice.
Mm.
Like you have to walk alongside your partner, not just like, you know,
so
drag them along.
So you can tell me about your thoughts about this, and then what time is it? We got to wrap up in like the next 5 to 10 minutes because we got to go to Fenway, kid.
Finish that beer.
Go Sox off, and I'll make that Corona disappear. So the whole notion of, and Jerry Durham says this, and he talks about relationship-centered PT. You know, we're so focused on patient-centered, but we're still calling them patients. And I get it. It's a medical thing. Mm-hmm. But even that term has some iatrogenic effects. You know, we talk about relationship-centered care. Make relationships with these people. Get to know them and learn what drives them, what's meaningful to them. Build positive relationships. The therapeutic alliance research is nuts, man. Like, there couldn't be more things to support that. So we have to learn from that and value that because that relationship-centered care is, that's where it's at.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what drives our culture at Boston PT and Wellness, all based on relationship-centered care.
Describe what you mean by, for the listeners, iatrogenic effects.
Yeah, so iatrogenic effects is basically like well-intentioned, unintentional side effects, negative side effects of like medical care. I think originally it was based off of just like surgical stuff, but we've kind of drawn it out as like the words that you use.
So like obliterated discs?
Yeah, like obliterated discs that you're sending MRIs to your patients that say obliterated discs. Or my girlfriend Steph, Steph Allen, DPT.
Shout out.
You know, she got a message from her best friend yesterday that's like, oh my God, my doctor just emailed me an MRI and there's 30 words and I don't know what it means. She was terrified. Yeah. Like, that is an iatrogenic effect. And that's the funny thing about biomedical model is that it's well-intentioned, but it shoots ourselves in the damn foot. Because healthcare costs, healthcare outcomes, the rising number in disability, the rising number in chronic pain, not only have they not changed, they continue to go up. So if the biomedical model was the answer, then we wouldn't be dealing with this shitstorm right now. So I think it's time. It's like the patient that comes in and is like, well, I've been stretching my neck for the last 3 years and it still hasn't gotten better. And it's like, well, are we ready to look at the, you know, go to the drawing board and talk about some other possibilities? This is no different.
Yeah.
The fact that we can't be having a hard gut check and figure that we need change, nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Cool. So as we wrap up, throw out the plugs. Where can people find you?
At Simple Strength Physio. That's like my more main handle for me. And at the Level Up Initiative is the online mentorship platform that I've created with some awesome people. That involves some awesome people like Will. And it's just a community of people that really fostered these core values of growth mindset, abundance mindset, forward thinking, humility, right? These sorts of things. So if you're about that life, make sure you check it out. And if you're not, make sure you check it out because hopefully we can persuade you that there is some good in the power of positive mindset and critical thinking. So that's about it. Oh, and I'm at Boston PT and Wellness. Just got low-key promotion to Director of Culture. Fuck yeah. So hype about that.
That's your title, Director of Culture?
Yeah, dog.
That's such a 2018 dope title.
Yeah, dude. Yo, Google has a fucking chief culture officer. So I think they're onto something, man. Culture is everything. And it's got to be constantly evolving, too. That's why it's good to bring in people that challenge you a little bit, because that's how you grow.
Cool.
Good, right. Dude, that was fun.
Let's go to Fenway.
We're still going to be nerding out about this same exact conversation. It's just not going to be recorded for the rest of the night. Interjected with a little bit of baseball and beers, but sweet.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the Alinea Life podcast.
You know I'm about that Alinea Life, baby. Thanks for listening, guys. Peace.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow us for more content on Instagram and Facebook at The Alinea Collective and our website, thealineacollective.com. Additional platforms you can download the podcast include iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Player FM, or wherever else you get your podcasts. New episodes dropping weekly.